You're listening to The Philosopher's Note on Wherever You Go, There You Are. More wisdom in less time.
Hi, this is Brian. Welcome to The Philosopher's Note on Wherever You Go, There You Are. Mindfulness Meditation in Everyday Life by Jon Kabat-Zinn. When we speak of meditation, it is important for you to know that this is not some weird cryptic activity, as our popular culture might have it. It does not involve becoming some kind of zombie, vegetable, self-absorbed narcissist, navel gazer, space cadet, cultist, devotee, mystic, or Eastern philosopher. Meditation is simply about being yourself and knowing something about who that is. It is about coming to realize that you are on a path whether you like it or not, namely, the path that is your life. Meditation may help us see that this path we call our life has direction, that it is always unfolding moment by moment, and that what happens now in this moment influences what happens next. End quote. That's Jon Kabat-Zinn from Wherever You Go, There You Are. For the last several decades, as a professor of medicine and the founding executive director of the Center for Mindfulness and Medicine, Healthcare and Society at the University of Massachusetts Medical School, Jon Kabat-Zinn has been one of the leading pioneers in bringing meditation into mainstream medicine. This book is a great collection of some of his best big ideas on mindfulness-based stress reduction, and I'm excited to share a handful of my favorites in this note. Hope you enjoy it, and here's to rocking our meditation practice. We'll kick it off with big idea number one, the practice of meditation. Quote, meditation means learning how to get out of this current, sit by its bank and listen to it, learn from it, and then use its energies to guide us rather than to tyrannize us. This process doesn't magically happen by itself. It takes energy. We call the effort to cultivate our ability to be in the present moment practice. Or meditation practice, end quote. If you haven't noticed, there tends to be a current of thoughts and emotions flowing through our minds pretty much every second of our lives. My hunch is you've probably noticed that by now. Think of the current of thoughts and feelings like a river, sometimes mellow and sometimes overflowing and raging. One of the key goals of meditation is to help us learn how to step out of that current and observe it from the shore. And as we practice stepping out of the current and observing, stepping out of the current and observing, stepping out of the current and observing, each time we strengthen our mind muscle so we have a much greater chance of gaining control of any emotion, whether it's impatience or anger or shame, that threatens to sweep us away. And that leads us to our next big idea, strengthening our samadhi muscles. Quote, concentration is a cornerstone of mindfulness practice. Your mindfulness will only be as robust as the capacity of your mind to be calm and stable. End quote. Concentration. As Kabat-Zinn advises us, our mindfulness will only be as strong as our ability to calm our mind and point it in the direction we choose. He continues by saying, quote, you can think of concentration as the capacity of the mind to sustain an unwavering attention on one object of observation. It is cultivated by attending to one thing, such as the breath, and just limiting one's focus to that. In Sanskrit, concentration is called samadhi, or one-pointedness. Samadhi is developed and deepened by continually bringing the attention back to the breath every time it wanders. When practicing strictly concentrative forms of meditation, we purposefully refrain from any efforts to inquire into areas such as where the mind went when it wandered off, or that the quality of the breath fluctuates. Our energy is directed solely toward experiencing this breath coming in, this breath going out, or some other single object of attention. With extended practice, the mind tends to become better and better at staying on the breath, or noticing even the earliest impulse to become distracted by something else, and either resisting its pull in the first place and staying on the breath, or quickly returning to it. End quote. I just love the idea of developing our samadhi, the one-pointedness muscle that allows us to step out of the current of our habitual and reactive thoughts and feelings and to choose the most empowered responses. Here's how I like to think about it. Imagine Arnold Schwarzenegger's physique, all ripped up and sculpted from the countless hours he spent in the gym. Now imagine His Holiness the Dalai Lama. Although it's not quite as easy to see inside his mind, it's at least as sculpted as Arnold Schwarzenegger's body. He spent as many hours training his mind as Schwarzenegger has spent on his body. Meditation workout after meditation workout, the Dalai Lama has done repetition after repetition, training his mind to come back to his breath, to come back to love, to come back to patience and passion. So, how's your mind looking? All Arnold Schwarzeneggered out, or a little soft and flabby? Let's get the strength training on. It leads us to the next big idea. What's your why? If you hope to bring meditation into your life in any kind of long-term committed way, you will need a vision that is truly your own, one that is deep and tenacious and that lies close to the core of who you believe yourself to be, what you value in your life, and where you see yourself going. Only the strength of such a dynamic vision and the motivation from which it springs can possibly keep you on this path year in and year out, with a willingness to practice every day and to bring mindfulness to bear on whatever is happening, to open to whatever is perceived, and to let it point to where the holding is and where the letting go and the growing need to happen. End quote. It's always a good idea to have a strong why for what we're doing, huh? Kind of hard to truly make that 100% commitment unless we have a really strong vision of how it ties to our most fundamental values. So, what's your why for developing a meditation practice? Here's a quick look at mine. I'm committed to creating an authentically awesome life, expressing as much love, creativity, kindness, generosity, enthusiasm, courage, wisdom, inspiration, joy, and overall goodness as I can, in service to my wife, my family, my friends, my community, and the world. To do this, it's incredibly clear to me that the starting point is getting my mind strong. Optimism and the ability to shape the contents of our consciousness is the number one principle all the great teachers come back to again and again and again, as I talk about in these notes, the Optimal Living 101 class, and in my book. It's equally clear to me that meditation is one of the most powerful ways to strengthen my mind as I develop the ability to step in between stimulus and response. Now, I'd meditate if all I got out of it was the ability to step in between that challenging stimulus and a craptastic habitual response, choosing my most empowered response instead of a lame one. But what's really cool is that we get a lot of other goodness out of meditation as well. As we discussed in our note on the relaxation revolution, science now shows that mind-body practices such as meditation not only keep us significantly healthier, they literally alter our genetics, changing the way our genes express themselves and keeping us much more healthy, creative, and fully alive. That rocks. But that's not even it. I also know that cultivating my samadhi muscles helps me plug into the divine within me, helping me shine with a radiant enthusiasm that supports the expression of all my other virtues. And finally, I kind of see meditation as a shower for my mind. I don't know about you, but I shower at least once a day. If I missed a day or two and you came within a few feet of me, you'd probably know. If I missed a week or two, you'd definitely know. And I don't want to imagine what I'd smell like if I missed a month or two. Same thing with my mind. If I missed a day or two, you'd probably know. If I missed a week or two, you definitely know. And I don't want to imagine who I would be if I missed a month or two. And finally, starting every morning with my meditation practice, it's pretty much impossible for me to have a really bad day, and definitely not two in a row. There's something truly magical to sitting down and cleaning my consciousness up so consistently. So that's a quick look at why I've meditated every day for at least 30 minutes for the last 2+ years, and why I don't plan to miss a day for the rest of my life. What's your why? And you might dig Kabat-Zinn's awesome exercise to help us discover it. He says this, try this. Try asking yourself why you meditate or why you want to meditate. Don't believe your first answers. Just write down a list of whatever comes to mind. Continue asking yourself. Also, inquire about your values. What you honor most in life. Make a list of what is really important to you. Ask yourself, what is my vision, my map for where I am and where I am going? Does this vision reflect my true values and intentions? Am I remembering to embody those values? Do I practice my intentions? How am I now in my job, in my family, in my relationships with myself? How do I want to be? How might I live my vision, my values? How do I relate to suffering, both my own and to others? End quote. So here's to developing a strong why if you're feeling it. And the next big idea is practice every moment. Quote, if mindfulness is deeply important to you, then every moment is an opportunity to practice. End quote. Love that. And it reminds me of Eknath Eswaran. In his brilliant book, Conquest of Mind, he says this, quote, Sri Aurobindo, one of 20th century India's most luminous figures, has a good motto for reminding us of this. All life is yoga. Every moment, he means, is an opportunity for training the mind. All life is yoga. And Genpo Roshi's equally awesome comment in his equally brilliant Big Mind, Big Heart, see those notes, he says, quote, we're at the point in our evolution that we all have to become conscious. This is a time of revolution. There's no holding back. So I'm about tearing down the monastery walls and seeing the whole world as the monastery, as the practice, as the spiritual temple. What we're all working on is this very being, this very life. This is the temple. It has no walls. End quote. This is a huge part of my meditation practice as well. It's not about sitting for 15 or 30 or 60 minutes and then being rude at the breakfast table. We've got to look at every moment as another opportunity to train our minds and to become more connected to our highest selves. So let's practice every moment. And the next big idea is becoming full human beings. Quote, I am told that in Pali, the original language of the Buddha, there is no word corresponding to our word meditation. Even though meditation might be said to have evolved to an extraordinary degree in ancient Indian culture. One word that is frequently used is bhavana. Bhavana translates as development through mental training. To me, this strikes the mark. Meditation really is about human development. End quote. How cool is that? They didn't even have a word corresponding to meditation in Buddha's Pali. I love that. This practice that we now call meditation was and is better understood as development through mental training. Fact is, it's impossible to develop into full human beings unless we deliberately train our minds. So let's. The next big idea is thoughts and waterfalls. Quote, meditation does not involve trying to change your thinking by thinking some more. It involves watching thought itself. End quote. That's from a chapter called Meditation, not to be confused with positive thinking. That's the name of the chapter. So meditation isn't about learning how to change our thoughts from negative to positive per se. It's about learning to observe the thoughts themselves. That process alone has an alchemizing effect. Simply seeing that we are not our thoughts is remarkably powerful. And cultivating this practice is another way to develop the samadhi muscles that allow us to step out of the stream of negative thoughts that can often sweep us away. Kabat-Zinn has a beautiful image to bring this point home. He says, quote, another way to look at meditation is to view the process of thinking itself as a waterfall, a continual cascading of thought. In cultivating mindfulness, we are going beyond or behind our thinking, much the way you might find a vantage point in a cave or depression in the rock behind a waterfall. We still see and hear the water, but we are out of the torrent. End quote. Isn't that beautiful? I love that image of us witnessing the waterfall of thoughts, but not being bombarded by those thoughts. Pretty cool. Next big idea is sitting with dignity. Quote, when we describe the sitting posture, the word that feels the most appropriate is dignity. Sitting down to meditate, our posture talks to us. It makes its own statement. You might say the posture itself is the meditation. If we slump, it reflects low energy, passivity, a lack of clarity. If we sit ramrod straight, we are tense, making too much of an effort, trying too hard. When I use the word dignity in teaching situations, as in sit in a way that embodies dignity, everybody immediately adjusts their posture to sit up straighter. But they don't stiffen. Faces relax, shoulders drop, head, neck, and back come into easy alignment. The spine rises out of the pelvis with energy. Sometimes people tend to sit forward away from the backs of their chairs more autonomously. Everybody seems to instantly know that inner feeling of dignity and how to embody it, end quote. So are you wondering how you should sit in meditation? There you go. Sit with dignity. Whether it's sitting in a chair or in a more formal meditation posture, keep the word dignity in mind. That brings us to the next big idea, commitment and discipline. Quote, one of the principal virtues of a daily discipline is an acquired transparency toward the appeals of transitory mood states. A commitment to getting up early to meditate becomes independent of wanting or not wanting to do so on any particular morning. The practice calls us to a higher standard, that of remembering the importance of wakefulness and the ease with which we can slip into a pattern of automatic living, which lacks awareness and sensitivity. Just waking up early to practice non-doing is itself a tempering process. It generates enough heat to rearrange atoms, gives us a new and stronger crystal lattice of mind and body, a lattice that keeps us honest and reminds us that there is far more to life than getting things done. Discipline provides a constancy which is independent of what kind of day you had yesterday and what kind of day you anticipate today. End quote. So if you've read enough of these notes, you know I'm a huge fan of consistency on our fundamentals and turning our discipline into blissipline. There's something truly magical about becoming the type of person who does what needs to be done, independent of whether or not we feel like it. So many teachers hit on this theme. For now, let's celebrate David Reynolds' wisdom from his great book, Constructive Living. Check out those notes, where he says, quote, the mature human being goes about doing what needs to be done regardless of whether that person feels great or terrible. Knowing that you are the kind of person with that kind of self-control brings all the satisfaction and confidence you will ever need. Even on days when the satisfaction and confidence just aren't there, you can get the job done anyway. End quote. One of my favorite thoughts, one of my favorite books, Constructive Living. Check out those notes. And moving on, we've got the next big idea, breath anchors. Quote, it helps to have a focus for your attention, an anchor line to tether you to the present moment and to guide you back when the mind wanders. The breath serves this purpose exceedingly well. It can be a true ally. Bringing awareness to our breathing, we remind ourselves that we are here now. So we might as well be fully awake for whatever is already happening. End quote. So a key idea of effective mindfulness meditation is to have an anchor for your attention. Imagine a boat getting tossed by the ocean's waves. To keep the boat in one place, the captain throws down an anchor. Same thing with our minds. If we want to keep our minds in one place, we've got to establish an anchor. And the breath is one of the best ones out there. Kabat-Zinn continues by saying, quote, to use your breathing to nurture mindfulness, just tune into the feeling of it, the feeling of the breath coming into your body and the feeling of the breath leaving your body. That's all. Just feeling the breath, breathing and knowing that you're breathing. This doesn't mean deep breathing or forcing your breathing or trying to feel something special or wondering whether you're doing it right. It doesn't mean thinking about your breathing either. It's just a bare bones awareness of the breath moving in and the breath moving out, end quote. For more on specific techniques for meditation, Google Jon Kabat-Zinn and or check out www.blissitations.com, where we're developing resources to help you develop an awesome meditation practice grounded in all these big ideas. That leads us to the next and final big idea, your job with a capital J. So in a chapter called What is My Job on the Planet with a Capital J, Kabat-Zinn tells the inspiring story of Buckminster Fuller, who, apparently, before he was recognized as a genius, had failed numerous times by age 32 and was contemplating suicide. Apparently, everything he tried didn't work out, and he thought perhaps life would be better for his wife and infant daughter if he ended his life. Thankfully for all of us, he decided to live from that moment on as if he had died that night and decided that he would become an employee of the planet, devoting himself to, quote, asking, what is it on this planet, which he referred to as Spaceship Earth, that needs doing that I know something about that probably won't happen unless I take responsibility for it? He decided he would just ask that question continuously and do what came to him, following his nose. In this way, working for humanity as an employee of the universe at large, you get to modify and contribute to your locale by who you are, how you are, and what you do. But it's no longer personal. It's just part of the totality of the universe expressing itself. Rarely do we question and then contemplate with determination what our hearts are calling us to do and to be. I like to frame such efforts in question form. What is my job on the planet with a capital J? Or what do I care about so much that I would pay to do it? If I ask such a question, I don't come up with an answer other than I don't know, then I just keep on asking the question. End quote. What an awesome exercise. Ultimately, our meditation is not the end goal in itself, but a vehicle to help us most fully live. So, what's your J-O-B with a capital J-O-B? Right? What would you actually pay to do that you love so much? What is it that you and only you can give to the world? From being a great parent to some creative product or project you're inspired about, what is it that you are destined to do? What is your job on the planet with a capital J? As you feel into that, here's to embracing our practices that help us most fully plug in so we can shine with an uber bright, radiant enthusiasm that lights up our world. And P.S. Jon Kabat-Zinn says, quote, once the universe is your employer, very interesting things start to happen, even if someone else is cutting your paycheck. But you do have to be patient. It takes time to grow this way of being into your life. The place to start, of course, is right here. The best time? How about now? End quote. So that's a quick look at this great book, Wherever You Go, There You Are by Jon Kabat-Zinn. So how about a quick overview of John and then some other notes I think you'll dig and then some sidebar quotes. We already talked about the fact that Jon Kabat-Zinn is a professor, a teacher at the University of Massachusetts Medical School. He's one of the leading guys in bringing meditation into mainstream medicine in secular America and the world. He received his PhD in molecular biology from MIT in 1971 in the laboratory of Nobel laureate Salvador Luria. And you can learn more about him. Google Jon Kabat-Zinn. Good, good guy. I met him briefly once and really enjoyed his presence and looking forward to spending more time with him in the future. For now, if you like this note, I think you'll enjoy the note on Conquest of Mind, The Relaxation Revolution, The Dhammapada, The Bhagavad Gita, and Mastery. And here are some sidebar quotes. Jon Kabat-Zinn says, quote, meditation is the process by which we go about deepening our attention and awareness, refining them, and putting them to greater practical use in our lives. Henry David Thoreau says, only that day dawns to which we are awake. Kabat-Zinn says, the stability and calmness which come with one-pointed concentration practice form the foundation for the cultivation of mindfulness. Without some degree of samadhi, your mindfulness will not be very strong. You can only look deeply into something if you can sustain your looking without being constantly thrown off by distractions or by the agitation of your own mind. The deeper your concentration, the deeper the potential for mindfulness. Another quote is, formal practice refers to specific periods of time in which we purposefully stop other activity and engage in particular methods of cultivating mindfulness and concentration. Jon Kabat-Zinn says, so when we take our seat in meditation and remind ourselves to sit with dignity, we are coming back to our original worthiness. That in itself is quite a statement. He says, too often our lives cease working because we cease working at life, because we are unwilling to take responsibility for things as they are and to work with our difficulties. He says, mindful inquiry can heal low self-esteem for the simple reason that a low self-estimation is really a wrong calculation, a misperception of reality. And he says, what is my job on the planet is one question we might do well to answer ourselves over and over again. Otherwise, we may wind up doing somebody else's job and not even know it. And finally, he says, perhaps the most spiritual thing any of us can do is simply to look through our own eyes, see with eyes of wholeness, and act with integrity and kindness. That is a really quick look at this great book, Wherever You Go, There You Are, Mindfulness, Meditation, and Everyday Life by Jon Kabat-Zinn. Hope you dug it and got something good out of it. And looking forward to sharing more with you soon. In the meantime, have an awesome day. See ya.
We hope you enjoyed this Philosopher's Note. Please go to www.philosophersnotes.com to download more.